coming up on this episode of The Social Hour. Twitter conversations are very confusing. Facebook wants to use your profile picture in new and interesting ways. How to customize your LinkedIn resume. And it's a meeting of the internet cat minds. All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Audio bandwidth provided by the new Winamp for Android, featuring wireless sync and one-click iTunes import. Now with free daily music downloads and full-length CD listening parties. Download it for free at winamp.com/android. Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 126, recorded Friday, August 30th, 2013. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Social Media Solutions from SAP. If you're a social media manager at a large enterprise, gain insight and engage in social media with Social Media Solutions from SAP to improve your customer service support experience. Take a guided tour at sap.com/twit. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 225,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/social hour to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Social Hour. It is episode 126. I am sitting in Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma, California, and I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur, and I am in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And I can't believe we've done that many shows, Sarah. It's really hard to believe.
I know. I was trying to think of something significant about the number 126. I don't know that there is one, but it does seem like, hey, we're healthily into our hundreds. We're a hundred and something. So
yeah, that's cool. I almost want to go back to one of the first shows and hear what we were talking about, because I just find week to week everything changes so much. So it'll be interesting to see how far we've come along with social media, because we're now talking about lots of new services. You were just mentioning before the show that you had just started using Snapchat with a few friends.
It's
so true. That's a bit of an evolution.
Yeah. So, okay. So a little bit of a Snapchat story. Oh, well, so this is Social Hour number one. Color App. Okay. So Color App, defunct.
That's gone.
Bought by Apple. Sound tracking still around, has been updated quite a few times. Rebecca Black making a lot of money off her song Friday. I mean, who's talked about Rebecca Black? And it is Friday. I haven't sung that song in a while. Myself and Sarah Lynn the Ballerina, which was a whole, the movie Black Swan was popular at the time.
Wow.
Facebook questions, that was like where you could ask people questions on Facebook. Amber, I don't even know if that's a feature anymore.
I don't know, but you Ask FM is obviously taking the lead there, I think, as a Q&A site.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Facebook questions, I think followed Tumblr questions, right? Because Tumblr questions followed FormSpring questions. And yep. Ask FM is kind of like FormSpring all over again.
Yeah, and I think they have something. I mean, I think we talked about it last week. I think Ask FM has, 70 million users now.
That's ridiculous.
It's crazy.
Absolutely ridiculous. So, yeah, Amber, you mentioned Snapchat. And I have mentioned that I was actually kind of getting into it. And Snapchat is, they call it, well, I don't know, adults who don't really necessarily get Snapchat and see all the kids using it say, oh, it's for sexting. You know, it's for sending titillating photos that aren't supposed to be saved anywhere. And that's not how I'm using it. In fact, I'm just basically sending silly photos back and forth with my friends. But it's fun because you don't really have to think about, you don't have to overthink anything. There's no composing a good picture. That's totally goes out the window. It's sort of just, you know, it's like little inside jokes and, or, hey, I look at this funny guy who's dancing on the street next to me kind of thing. Just like little slices of life. And I really look forward to it. When I get a push notification that somebody sent me a Snapchat, I'm like, oh, yeah, yay, it's going to be good. So I'm into it. It's happening.
I think that's a good point that you don't have to think about composing it, though, because I was just at an event last night and I was sending out a tweet and I realized that even in the middle of the event, it probably took me 5 or 10 minutes to sit there and compose the tweet. So I'm not paying attention to anyone. I'm trying to get the right filter on my image. And so there's a lot of effort that goes into social media updates, Sarah.
Yes. No kidding. It's nice not to have to overthink it, you know?
No pressure.
Nobody cares if I'm witty or a good photographer or any of that stuff. So, yes, if you haven't tried Snapchat, I don't know, get a friend and see if it's the right thing
for
you.
Give it a whirl.
You could do photos and videos also. So I feel as though probably my friends are getting a little tired of my extreme close-up cat photos. But you know what? Too bad. They only have to look at them for 5 seconds and then they're gone forever. So,
we have a little cat thing later in the show. So we'll, I'll tease that for a second. But I guess we should talk about our first story. This was a big one. You know, I tweeted this out earlier this week and I didn't think that many people would pay attention to it. But obviously, a lot of people interested in the intersection between television and the social world, especially with this acquisition of Trendr. Twitter has acquired this service that is essentially tracking television watching and social media interactions.
Yeah, so Trendr, I was not, I'd heard of it, Amber, but I wasn't really that. If you said, what is Trendr all about? I would say, oh, I don't know, trends on social media. And Trendr TV actually is really interesting. And this is what Twitter's obviously interested in. If you were to go to the Today's Social Top 5, for example, it'll tell you, based on information that it's getting from people talking about certain shows on Twitter, on Facebook, on GetGlue, and on a network called Viggle, which I'm not using, but I've heard of, what the top cable shows versus broadcast shows are. So this is, you know, it is U.S.-based, but cable shows, we've got U.S. Open. That's a tennis tournament that's happening right now. That's a big deal on ESPN2. Over on the broadcast show side, this episode of the Dr. Oz show is getting a lot of people interested. So this is obviously something that Twitter's been moving towards for a while, trying to figure out how they can quantify people's engagement, interest, willingness to share and have conversations about television on Twitter. It seems like they probably looked at Trendr's technology and said, instead of replicating this, we should just buy the company.
Yeah, I mean, I think after working in a TV station for a while now, and I know, Sarah, you've had experience in broadcast TV as well, and they're really struggling to try to figure out a way that they can really make television interactive and they can really engage people in that conversation. And it's amazing to see some of the shows that do it well and some of the shows that are really failing and attempting to being able to do it. And then I also wonder, you know, we were just talking before the show about people watching entire seasons of shows at a time on services like Netflix, and that's going to change the social conversation, because so often I find the social conversation works really well with live television events. Mm-hmm. And it does change it when all of a sudden I'm by myself and I watch Orange is the New Black, the series on Netflix, over a weekend. And am I going to tweet with people about it? I don't know where they are at in that particular series.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Twitter tackles the problem that even though it's such a great place to hang out when you're enthusiastic about something that you're watching live, because everything that's coming in live from people who are like-minded is, it all feels so relevant. It's like, we're all in this together, because it's diverging from the way that we're all consuming television, which is, yes, live TV isn't going anywhere anytime soon, but a Netflix series like Orange is the New Black, and I remember feeling this way about, what's the Kevin Spacey series?
No, House of Cards.
House of Cards. Because I didn't jump on it until enough people had liked the series. So I went, okay, I'll watch it. And then, of course, I loved it. But I felt like tweeting about it would just seem like I was really late to the party, so I didn't bother. I thought about it, but I thought, nobody really wants to hear how Sarah's 2 months behind everybody else. So, you know, that doesn't work for Twitter either.
And you know what? If you're interested in this conversation, there's a video that's being circulated around the internet with Kevin Spacey, who is talking about the experience that he had with Netflix and his production company and talking about the future of TV. I know a few people have sent that to me, but you can Google it. Just Google Kevin Spacey television. It was a speech that he did at a convention, I believe, in the past week or so. So if you're into the topic of television and social, it's a great one to watch.
Absolutely. All right. So some more interesting news from Twitter. You may have either been outraged yourself or confused or noticed that other people were extremely outraged and or confused with a new feature that Twitter introduced to its web interface and also its both its iOS and Android apps, its official native Android and iOS apps. called Conversations, which doesn't sound like anything too horrible, but it makes Twitter act really differently. So, for example, I see in my timeline here, and they say blue lines, but I've actually gone ahead and changed my line color just to be different. By the way, if you're interested in how you do that, you go into your settings, and then you go into your design, and then you scroll down to link color, and you can make it anything you want. It's a hex code type thing. But if you're not interested in hex codes, you can just choose from a color palette here. Anyway, just a little side note. But it's a blue line by default, and it's a blue line on the Twitter apps. But if I go to just my timeline here, I can see right up here at the top, there's a conversation happening between two people that I know. And the whole idea is that Twitter wants to make it easier for third parties to kind of follow along in other people's conversations. So my friend Cap and my friend Tyler are talking about stuff that's happening at Etsy. Cap works there. And if I sort of say, okay, well, Cap said something about some Etsy stat, and then someone asked for pictures, and then he's sort of responding.
There's another tweet.
There you go. Yeah, and it's coming in real time. It's kind of neat. So if I say, okay, well, I'm interested here. What else is going on here? I can go ahead and expand the conversation. Then I see that it's been retweeted 4 times, the original tweet, 6 favorites here. I can see who retweeted and who favorited. And if there were other people in this conversation that jumped in that I don't follow, so it wouldn't show up on my timeline, if I expanded the conversation, I would see them. So it's kind of interesting. Amber, you might notice that I'm talking to somebody that you know and be kind of interested in what some random other friends of mine that maybe you haven't been introduced to yet had to say about the whole thing. Maybe it's a particular topic that interests you or something you're researching, or you just kind of want to be a fly on the wall. The problem is that it kind of makes Twitter be it's a most recent tweet at the top, unless it's a conversation, and then it goes in reverse order. And it's got a lot of people a little up in arms at the fact that it looks and acts really, really different. Amber, how do you feel about this?
Well, I think it's interesting. I'm one of those people, and I know everybody uses Twitter differently, but I am one of those people who loves to follow conversations that people are having on Twitter and sometimes interject in conversations when it's appropriate. And I do like to see that they are just making it easier to be able to do that, because I think in many ways, one of the issues with Twitter is it's so much just a blast from people as far as sending out tweets. And very often it's hard to have a continuous conversation unless you're using hashtags and constantly searching them. So I think this opens it up. I think for some people, they're going to be a little bit confused about it maybe at first. But eventually, it just seems, in my opinion, to make it a more interesting platform and definitely a better place to have conversations than it is today.
I actually think that this is the right call for Twitter. It's not hard to understand how it works. It just takes a little getting used to. I know some people, there have been some questions of, well, all right, so let's say tweets are connected by a line if it's a conversation where people are directly at replying to each other. Well, why are some lines longer than others? It seems to me, I hope I'm right, or maybe I really don't understand this, that it corresponds to the length of the tweet. So the original tweet in the example that we were talking about earlier looks like it's almost at its 140 character limit. So that's a little bit longer. And then you've got sort of these several word answers. And so the lines are shorter. I mean, obviously Twitter thought about this. There's a rhyme and reason to why things look the way that they do. But Amber, it makes it feel a lot more like Facebook, actually, even though Facebook is probably, well, I don't want to say it's a prettier interface because I don't know that I feel that way, but it's much more conducive to, oh, I get it. Somebody updated something on Facebook and now there's a conversation and then there's other stuff that's happened more recently. But this is exactly what Twitter's doing. It's just designed to work within the Twitter confines. And I think for a lot of people, especially, yes, power users, we just don't like things changing and we don't feel like this needs to be spelled out so much. I can follow a conversation, but I think it makes it easier for just the general public to say, yeah, Twitter, I totally get it. It's not a mystery.
Yeah. And I mean, even if it does feel a little bit like Facebook, just because there are only 140 characters for everyone, I think it just makes it easier to have conversations there. Because I find on Facebook sometimes if people have really long posts, I tend not to read them. So just the fact that it is so micro, I think that it is appealing and easy just to be able to scan conversations. Now, we have one other Twitter story before we get into some Facebook stories. And this one is about Twitter commerce. So we have talked endlessly on the show about Twitter figuring out a way to be able to monetize the platform. And it looks like, based on this article that I have here from Forbes, that they've just hired someone who will head up commerce at Twitter. His name is Nathan Hubbard. He used to be a Ticketmaster executive. And the idea of his job will that be, he'll have to figure out a commerce revenue stream. And it should be interesting to see what happens here as far as being able to make money on Twitter. They have a bunch of stories and examples in this Forbes article about retailers trying to figure out the best way to monetize on Twitter, some successful and some not so successful. So I don't think this move is a big surprise, but good to see that they're taking this seriously. And it looks like this person's role is going to evolve a lot.
I'd like to see, yeah, what he comes up with. Coming from Ticketmaster is interesting because Ticketmaster is not necessarily known to be a huge friend to artists or the public. And Twitter has at least positioned itself as a company that's willing to work with brands and certainly wants celebrities and musicians to embrace the service and that sort of thing. But then again, you're not selling tickets as your core business on Twitter. It's a mode of communication. So I saw some people saying, ah, Ticketmaster, I mean, geez, Twitter's hiring somebody from Ticketmaster. This isn't going to end well. But I don't know that it matters so much that it was Ticketmaster itself if he's got a proven track record of coming up with great revenue solutions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and I think it gets to the point where what do people expect? No one's going to have experience in exactly this industry, right? And that's obviously an issue for many startups, is that to find someone who has that exact type of experience is often difficult, but at least he has some online experience. So it'll be neat to see what happens here. And I mean, there's huge potential. I do think they're up against a lot of competition. And also before the show, Sarah, when we were talking about Pinterest and its popularity and how it continues to grow and seeing so many retailers going to Pinterest and eventually figuring out ways that they're able to monetize using that platform, I think Twitter has some serious competition, more competition today than they've ever had.
Yeah, certainly. I've sort of gravitated towards Pinterest lately. And, you know, Twitter is... It's kind of becoming, to me, this is, you know, I'm going off on a little tangent, but I've sort of gotten to the point where if I don't check path often enough, I don't want to check it at all because there's too much to catch up on. There's a 24-hour period where I know everyone's sort of gone out and done all these fun things and I don't already know about it. I find it a huge burden to sort of scroll through everything. You know, maybe it's because I'm feeling FOMO about the whole thing, fear of missing out. But Twitter kind of feels that way to me, too. There was a time where, maybe I wasn't following everything in real time, but I would always scroll back eventually when I had an hour or a certain amount of time to kill so that I felt like I didn't miss any tweets. Now I'm following too many people.
You can't keep up.
Yeah. The too many tweets come in. I'm busy. I'm using other things. It's like if I see your tweet, awesome. I do try to read all my ad replies. And I think I'm pretty good at that, but I would say I probably read 30% of the tweets that come through my feed now, just because I don't think there's an alternative.
I don't think so. I mean, I follow, I think, thousands of people. I can't remember exactly how many. I'm at 5,000 or 6,000. And what I find is that I've just given up entirely on being able to catch up with what people are doing, but I sort of check in now and again, Sarah. So I have my times where I'll just kind of skim Twitter for 10 or 15 minutes and see the best of the best and just accept that I'm not going to see everything from everyone. Of course, that means people I'm following, if they have news coming out, I'm just not going to see it, right? I will see the replies, but I do find in the morning, you know, one of the first things that I do is I go on Twitter and just check Twitter to see what's happening. But it's more of a news source for me than pretty much anything.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, it's I use it probably the most when I'm getting ready for TNT in the morning, because I want to see any news that's breaking that maybe hasn't hit, some of the blogs that I'm already following. But again, we all use things differently, and that's okay.
We do. This is an interesting piece of news from Facebook, and we have a few Facebook stories today. I just saw this probably 2 days ago when it happened, but Facebook has changed the rules once again around running contests on Facebook. And I've had an experience as a consultant working with companies who are trying to run contests there, and it's been pretty cumbersome and kind of clunky, and there are lots of rules and regulations, and it's a pretty tight network as far as going on and running a contest. Previously, you used to have to use a third-party app. Well, it turns out that Facebook has loosened up a little bit, and the idea being that you don't no longer have to necessarily use a third-party app to create a Facebook promotion. You can do the promotion directly from your page, which means that you can get people to comment on something you post to be entered in a contest. They can like something you post. So it really opens up that whole ecosystem, and this is great for small businesses. And I feel like this is the third piece of news we've had in the past week, Sarah, that Facebook has done something that is good and a really positive move for the site.
Yeah, Facebook is obviously constantly iterating, and they made some other changes, and we'll talk about some of that stuff too. But yeah, as far as the small business element of it, I think that's awesome, because it seems to me that so many of the brand initiatives that are supposed to be such great ideas on Facebook end up sort of falling flat. And that's because it's not necessarily geared towards that kind of small business solution. So have you seen any examples of businesses that you've come across, Amber, that you think will be able to benefit from these changes, or even you yourself?
I think a lot. I mean, the thing is, most companies that I've ended up working with in the past, they want to run some type of contest or promotion on Facebook. But because the rules have been so strict, there are so many rules around how they can run that contest or promotion. So even if you want to do something like a $500 giveaway, you have to jump through all of these hoops to be able to do it. Now, with the way that they've set it up, if you have a Facebook page, let's say you're a local restaurant and you want to give someone a $500 gift certificate to your restaurant, then you can now run that contest promotion on your page and say, for every person who likes, or maybe you comment or whatever it might be, you can be entered in the contest, and then you can do the giveaway. So I think it's a big win for smaller brands. You know, some of the big brands, as we know, they pay to be on Facebook and participate. So I think for smaller businesses, this is a great thing because so many of them rely on contests as a way to be able to really market what they do and to increase engagement without buying fans on Facebook.
I think also the whole third-party app thing, sometimes it works great. But yeah, if you're trying to get the word out about something and there was no way to directly engage on Facebook, where you know a lot of your potential customers are just hanging out all the time, that's just so much more of a barrier to entry. And it's like, why wouldn't Facebook just want people to think about Facebook as the place to be able to reach out to their audience and their customers? Makes sense to me.
It does. It does make sense.
All right. So another little Facebook change is their privacy policy, which they have introduced this week, yesterday, actually. It's supposed to go into effect next Wednesday. It's the 5th. What day is the 5th? 5th of September is next Thursday. And as Facebook has done with the last couple of privacy policies that it's pushed out, is it gives a little bit of a grace period for the public to absorb what the changes are and then give Facebook feedback onto whether, you know, they're unacceptable, they seem good, maybe proposed amendments. Facebook obviously reserves the right to not listen. But I think if enough people say, this is a terrible idea and here's why, then the company says, well, there's really no reason for us to go against that many people who are going to be, an angry majority. So new privacy policy, most of it, if you read the verbiage, is pertaining to the way that they use all of our information. You know, this is anytime you're interacting with somebody else, or you like a brand, or you use a third-party app to push what music you're listening to, all of that stuff is data that Facebook uses and says, we use it, and you should understand that. And here are your options if you want to be selective about using it in your privacy settings in order to run advertising against us. Got it. Well, one of the new interesting ways that Facebook wants to make sure that it's keeping tabs on us is our profile pictures. Now, Amber, if your Facebook profile is completely locked down and I am not your friend on Facebook and I find your profile, I can't see anything, but I do see your profile picture. That is something that is public for everybody. At least enough for me to say, ah, that this is Amber's locked down profile. Ooh, I can't see anything except that one profile picture. So that's public information. Facebook says probably that's a picture of you. Now, not everybody uses a picture of themselves in a profile picture. Sometimes it's a family member or a pet or a picture of a sunset or whatever. But most people do. And often it's a picture that's flattering or, you know, it shows you off type of a thing. So Facebook says, why not use that against the facial recognition software we already have in place so that if you, Amber, upload a picture of me, Facebook says, oh, wait, that's Sarah Lane, right? Because it looks like this profile picture that we have on her. Then you can tag me more easily. Facebook obviously wants to encourage more tagging. And then, of course, as a tagged person, I can say either, yes, please put that on my timeline, or on the other end of the spectrum, I don't like that photo, I want that tag removed, or no, that's not me. Facebook, you're wrong. So it's interesting because I think a lot of people will say, oh gosh, this is terrible, there's going to be more tagging. But in a way, I feel like it's probably going to float more pictures of you just up to the surface, to your attention, that maybe you wouldn't have known about otherwise because you weren't tagged in. Maybe I'm being optimistic, but.
And then I think that really forces people to further understand Facebook privacy settings and to ensure that photos you're tagged in don't necessarily appear on your timeline or wherever that might be, you know, because I think that becomes a bigger issue here is just some of the automatic stuff that happens on Facebook. I don't know. Facial recognition technology is a tricky one. Generally speaking, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I can understand them wanting to consider this. I think there's going to be major backlash from people. I think what will happen is people will then end up changing their profile pictures, Sarah.
To something besides themselves. Yeah, I wondered about that too. Because that that would be a great way to get around this. If you really have a problem with it, you know, and you say, well, here's my adorable dog or my favorite pair of shoes with... facial recognition is not going to pull that up ever.
I'm imagining a lot of middle finger photos going up.
That too. And I also, there was a great article on All Things D about this topic and just the idea of facial recognition and how comfortable we all are. And I think it was Mike Isaac who writes for them said, the thing is that being tagged in a photo is, to us, it's like, oh, okay, you know, it's just, there's just sort of this web that makes us all a little bit more connected. But it's so important for Facebook because if you and I are tagged in a photo together, Facebook says, oh, Sarah and Amber are good enough friends to hang out. They go to the taqueria. They have lunch. They are real friends. They're not necessarily contacts on Facebook who don't know each other. I don't really know all the people that I am friends with on Facebook. In fact, I probably, you know, hang out regularly with less than half of them. And that's okay, whatever. Sometimes you're internet friends with people. But Facebook knows that the whole IRL thing carries a lot of weight. So it really behooves them to figure out how to make us all tag each other more easily and more often. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting one to keep watching. And there's lots of interesting facial recognition apps that are out there, also a little bit disturbing. We also have an article here about Facebook, and the question is Facebook making you depressed? This headline that you found said it's not making you depressed, but the internet is. So I've just skimmed this one. What's this one all about?
Well, so this article was published, I don't know, I read it last weekend. I think it's about a week old now. And what it is over at The Verge, and it was really interesting. It was pointing to a variety of studies and surveys that have been taken of people recently that all seem to point to the trend that Facebook makes people depressed. And why is that happening? And why are all these people on Facebook hanging out? Is it because we're spending too much time on Facebook? What is it? Well, The Verge sort of breaks down some of these. They say, for example, there was a study by the University of Michigan which measured the moods of people and, you know, try to figure out, you know, who says, yes, Facebook depresses me. And they said, well, first of all, they only surveyed 82 people. That's not a very good sample size. And they're all in college. So that's not really representative of a billion people worldwide. That's just a certain kind of person that's on Facebook and not that many of them. And then it said, well, you know, if this was a conclusion about whether Facebook makes college kids depressed, maybe that'd be a little closer to it, but that's not even really what it was either. Then there was another study that showed that people said, yes, it makes me depressed. But then you get into what is using Facebook? I mean, using Facebook to me means you open up some form of Facebook, whether it's an app or the website on in your browser, and you're looking at something. That's using Facebook to me. It doesn't mean that I ever interact. So if you're just passively looking through your newsfeed once a day and you feel like everybody has a really exciting life and you're just sort of sitting around looking at Facebook, sure, maybe you'd sort of feel bad about yourself. But maybe you're the one who's posting all of this stuff and you're kind of putting this exciting life for yourself. And look, I went on vacation and look at these wonderful pictures and updating my profile pic. This is such a good picture of me. That's a little bit different. Maybe you're on the up and up, but it might cause other people to feel like, well, I'm not doing that much. Sarah just seems like she's so, you know, fun and busy. And the whole conclusion, if there's anything just to draw from this question of why does Facebook make you upset, is that, and this is Ellis Hamburger over at The Verge, it says, it's not Facebook specifically that's making anybody depressed. It's just the internet. It's texts that you wish you were receiving from somebody that never come. It's, you know, ex-girlfriends or boyfriends or partners that won't go away because your friends are still friends with them. I have that problem. It's, you know, cyberbullying. We talked about that. Was it last week, Amber, or 2 weeks ago on Ask FM? It's all of that stuff that can contribute to someone's bad mood. And I tend to agree. I can't imagine Facebook specifically being more a cause of any of this than anything else. It's just that so many more people are on Facebook than other social networks.
I also think that people on Facebook, there's so many people who treat it almost like an online diary. And I see that especially with, I have some teenagers in my family who I follow, and they really use it to express how they're feeling more than they would use Twitter, say, for example. And so I do find it, out of all of the websites, I find sometimes I go to Facebook and I think, this is sort of a depressing place. I don't know if I am friends with the wrong people, but it does feel as though people are posting a lot of, you know, complaining about their jobs and their lives. And I just don't have as much of that on Twitter. So I can see where this article might be coming from, but I think you're exactly right. The sample size is so small. And I think there was a great quote in the article. I just closed it now in my browser, but it said something along the lines of, it's like going to a bar and talking about alcohol and only interviewing alcoholics. You're going to get a very skewed sense of what is reality. And I think it's one of those things, it's all about moderation, right? But I have noticed when I watch one of my teenage cousins use Facebook, how she uses it literally like a diary. I mean, she goes on there and if she's feeling sad, she says, I'm feeling really sad today. I'm feeling down. And if you come in and read that, it seems devastating, right?
Right.
But there's a different comfort level, I think, with sharing on Facebook than I see in other services.
Yes.
At least about emotions.
Yes. I agree with you. And, you know, that's not even like a teenage thing. I know people who, that's just the way Facebook is about, these are my thoughts, you know, please contribute some responses. But I would say it whether you did or not. And it can be a little, it can make you feel a little like, oh, gosh, too much. You know, is that a little too much? But again, it would be almost impossible to say, well, do you use Facebook? Are you depressed? Well, it's probably Facebook, because there's so many different ways that people use all of these services. You'd have to specifically be like, okay, we want you to look at this brand page, spend 5 minutes putting captions on your photos, and, you know, 10 more minutes looking at your general timeline, and then tell me exactly how you feel, and then obviously sample a lot more people at once.
We got two interesting tweets here. One is kind of a funny one. This one is from John Kane, who's watching, who says to the question, is Facebook making you depressed? He says, not at all, ... as I finish photoshopping myself into an unrealistic scenario to one up my friend's exciting lives on Facebook. So very funny. And then Wayne says, it is depressing because we keep comparing our lives to others, not remembering that those are simply others' highlight reels. So I think that's something important to keep in mind.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. It's like, it's sort of like when a couple breaks up and we all know this couple, and everyone goes, but they seem so perfect. Mm-hmm. And then you sort of hear like, well, behind the scenes, there was a lot more going on. That's like anybody's life. And Facebook profiles are no different. I think it's something I actually kind of remind myself every once in a while, where I sort of go like, man, that guy's got all the luck. What a fun life he leads. I'm not talking about anyone specific, but in general. And then it's like, but it's always, that's, yeah, if you show somebody your highlight reel, no life is all highs.
Well, the best of the best.
Very few of them are anyway. Yeah. All right, let's move on. And well, actually, we should remind you, Amber mentioned a couple people are tweeting at us, and that's because everyone who's watching our show live is able to interact with us during the show, which is really quite a bit of fun. We record the show live on Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern time, which is in Amber's time zone and some of yours as well. And it's always fun to everybody who is able to interact with us live, who's chatting with us in our chat room. But of course, you can go to twit.tv/TSH to catch up on any episodes you may not have been able to watch live, or maybe just prefer to watch on demand, or maybe you like to watch on your big TV and you prefer to grab one of our audio or video feeds. We've got those too. Everything is at our website at twit.tv/TSH. Oh, yeah. Last week was all about Ben Affleck being the new Batman. Yeah, it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it? I didn't even see any tweets about that this week.
What did you call that? The Batfleck meme?
Batfleck. Yes.
Love that.
Thank you. I'm sure I'm not the only one to make that joke. I'm probably one of a million to make the joke within an hour.
With that going away and Miley Cyrus going away.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah.
Go away. That's fabulous.
Yeah. In fact, I've found that now even saying the word twerk, you get a lot of people groaning saying, ugh, why won't that just die already? It's like, mm-hmm. I mean, it's really been a global meme for just a few days, but hey, yeah. All right. Let's take a moment to thank SAP for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Speaking of following different keywords and certain trends and certain topics, everyone who works in social media, who's supposed to stay on top of a brand and what people are saying about your brand and all the places that they might do so, whether it's a personal blog or Twitter or Facebook or on some sort of a review site, if you sell a particular gadget, all that stuff is really, really important because you want to take that information. You want to make your product better. You want to reach out to the community and your customers, and you want to keep them happy. SAP has an initiative, call it something like that, called Social Media Solutions, and it improves your customer service and your support experience. How does it do that? A couple different ways. It listens to what people are saying about you online. It picks up all sorts of stuff like certain URLs and keywords and is even able to sort of get emotional responses. This person said something on Twitter. This person's angry. Here's a little red flag. You might want to get back to this person right away and seem like you're on top of it. That sort of thing really surfaces sentiment and can also help point you to somebody who's maybe on the fence, ready to buy your product. Maybe you want to nudge them, give them a little helping hand and make that sale. Then, of course, there's the engaging component, and that helps you improve customer service and support. You can set rules about who on your team is supposed to handle what. You know, maybe you're the tech support gal, or maybe you're sort of better handling being sort of the front facing person who talks to the community or who's managing the Twitter social account. All of that stuff, you just want to stay on top of it. And of course, the bigger your company is, the more potential you have to let things fall through the cracks, unless your team is using the right solutions. You can drive sales. You can quickly solve customer problems. You can respond to customer feedback quickly and effectively. And that's all from SAP. Social Media Solutions this is what they do. They've really got a great thing put together, and they give you more than marketing. Anybody who knows marketing it's a complex business. More than marketing, because it improves customer service and the support experience. In fact, if you go to sap.com/twit, you can watch a guided tour. It'll kind of walk you through, hey, this is what we do at SAP. These are the sorts of solutions that you as a company could adopt and really, really benefit from. See for yourself how Social Media Solutions from SAP works right now at sap.com/twit. Or, when the show's over, at your leisure. And thanks to SAP for sponsoring us. All right, let's move on to something cat-related.
Okay, I was just kidding when I put in the rundown that this segment is called Cat Crap.
I'm okay with that, although it reminds me of a litter box.
I know. So I'm thinking, I just tweeted out, I think cat culture is better.
Okay. I'm, I'm, sounds, I'm into that. Cat culture. Yeah.
It's a big part of the internet and social. So I don't know if you saw this article. I just wanted to share it with you because we did have Little Bub on the show a few weeks ago. If you missed that episode, you should definitely download it. And it looks as though Little Bub and Grumpy Cat have met. Did you see this, Sarah?
I sure did, Amber.
Of course you did.
It was the highlight of my week. In fact, it's funny, on TNT this morning, sometimes our Friday shows are, you know, we like to sort of loosen up a little bit. And we have a little poll that we do during the show where we let the audience choose one of our stories. And everyone chose that I needed to come up with a cat video. And that's, I don't know, that's never happened before. And this exact vine was actually what I came up with, was Lil Bub meeting Grumpy Cat. There are actually a few vines and a variety of photos that came from both Twitter accounts for I Am Lil Bub. And I think Grumpy Cat's official Twitter is what? Real Grumpy Cat? I follow both. And they're both my very favorites. And it really made my week, Amber. I couldn't be happier. And they seem to get along okay, considering.
Good news.
All things considered. Yeah.
That makes me feel a lot better. I wasn't sure if you saw that, but I had to highlight that one for you.
Yes. I'm very appreciative. You know, it's funny. They are in Minnesota, or were a couple days ago, for an internet cat festival. This is a real thing. It's all about the sort of the idea that the internet is made of cats. There are so many cat celebrities now. So many people love these videos. They get so many views. And there should be a place to celebrate the greatness that is cats on the internet. So it happens in Minnesota, of all places. At least it's warm this time of year.
That is crazy. I had no idea.
Yep. Huh. Yep. They were in a hotel in Minnesota together. Both cats travel. And I think I've said in the past that I think it seems crazy because my cats do not like to travel, nor do most cats. But these cats apparently are both very unique and they enjoy it. So they were made to be stars.
I don't know if I'm disturbed or impressed. It's hard to tell. Okay. I am impressed because I had tweeted out about social media tips and to get people's tips who are watching the show right now. Got a bunch of great stuff, Sarah. You probably saw some of it in your Twitter feed. And thought we would highlight this particular tweet. This one is from Tyler Ellsworth. It's a social media tip about using LinkedIn. I'm not sure if we've mentioned this before on the show, but it's a good one, even if we have. Tyler says, you can get a custom URL from LinkedIn for your resume. Also helps people find you on Google. So a really smart move for people who use LinkedIn.
Yeah. In fact, what was that? It was a few weeks ago that we highlighted somebody's very clever resume that was designed to look like a Google search results page.
Oh, remember yes. That? So this was amazing.
That was amazing. And that was obviously very creative. I can't remember exactly what episode it was, but it was, I don't know, probably about a month ago. But this is, it's sort of the same idea where it's like, maybe the idea of being like linkedin.com/in/Sarah Lane or whatever the URL is for my profile is not catchy enough, but I could buy, Sarah Lane is the right person for you.com or I don't know, whatever your custom URL is, and then give a prospective employer that information. And it kind of puts the finishing touches on a resume that might look really good on LinkedIn otherwise.
Yeah, definitely. So I think I went in and I created a custom URL already for my LinkedIn profile, but I just went back to check and it's really simple. All you do is go into the edit profile feature within LinkedIn. You can choose a custom URL on the right-hand side where it says edit your profile, and then you can put your name in. Keep in mind, one of the things that LinkedIn does warn you about is that there could be profile names that are already taken. I don't think that's a huge surprise based on how many people use LinkedIn, but a really simple way to just look more impressive when you're sharing your LinkedIn profile and you're applying for a job.
Agreed. Applying for a job is
a goodie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to use all the tools that are available to us, and that's a really good one. I guess I knew that you could do this. I've never taken advantage of it, but I really should. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah,
tip. It's just one other little thing that LinkedIn provides to make you want to use LinkedIn as your resume, which I do. So that'll be one of my weekend projects. I'm going to put it on my list.
And there were a few other tips. So I think they're all hashtagged with social hours. So if you want to go through and find those other tips, you can find them, and we'll include some on an upcoming show, I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. All right, let's move on to our social marketing spotlight. Something about a company I've never heard of, Future Shop.
Yeah, Future Shop is a big electronics store in Canada. And I just read an article about this campaign that they've put together and thought we could talk about it just because it is back to school. And I was kind of thinking we should have some back to school content maybe in the show. And this is a neat one. It's a marketing campaign they came up with. I saw a local newspaper who wrote an article about it. And they have grants for students. They have about $50,000 that they're giving away. And the way that they're giving it away is really interesting. They're using social media sites like Instagram and Twitter, and they're also asking people to try out for their radio grant. So what it is they have something called an Instagram. This is one of four categories that you can win, and you click on Instagram on their main page, and then you, it says Instagram the quiz answer and win. You answer quizzes, and you could win money towards buying supplies at Future Shop, any type of electronics. With the Twitter grant, for example, they have a little contest now called Easiest Essay Ever, and they ask on a daily basis for students to write a 140-character essay based on a topic that they put out there every morning, and you have a chance that one person once a day wins a $140 gift card, and it's just fun. I thought it was just a clever way to get students engaged and get them winning a little bit of money here and there, up to $50,000 total that they're giving away, and using all of the top social media sites.
Yeah, you know, when I was in college, that would have seemed like a lot of money. I'd absolutely participate. Yeah. I was about to say, what do you got to lose? But of course, it's some of your personal information. But yeah, this is great. Now, Best Buy owns Future Shop, says Space Guy in the chat room. It's the Canadian arm of Best Buy. Future Shop. It's so weird. I mean, Best Buy is such a big part of my... I was going to say it was a big part of my life. I don't actually go to Best Buy that often, but it's like... I mean, I know the brand recognition, course, very high for Best Buy. I've never heard of Future Shop. It's kind of funny the way that they're, you know, you've got regional name differences for whatever reason, and we just don't know about them.
Yeah, we still have Best Buy here, which is kind of strange. So we have Best Buy and Future Shop.
And what's the difference?
I'm sure if you had people from those companies, they would say there was a big difference, but right. I don't think there's that much difference. The only thing I will say about Future Shop is they do a great job with their online community efforts. So they're great with social media, and they have a lot of blogs, and I used to write for them years ago, but they do a nice job online. So other than that, there's not a massive difference. I do believe, and this may have changed, but I do believe that Future Shop salespeople are on commission, whereas Best Buy people are not. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure someone's going to correct me with that, but that's how it was at one point, I remember, and that was a big difference between the two of them.
Aha, I see. So, and sometimes when employees are on commission, it can translate to the customer as being pushy because everyone wants your business. It's not just sort of like, oh, at the end of the day, if we made this much money, everybody wins. It's Joe or Tina made a certain amount of money. You know, what's funny is in Best Buy's in the U.S., also people aren't on commission, although I find them pretty helpful, at least at my local Best Buy. But there is a Magnolia inside the Best Buy that's near me, which I went to a bunch of times when I was doing a big home audio research project last year. And they are on commission. And it's funny, and I'm not in sales, so I'm not even going to go down the road of whether or not it's better to have people on commission or not, because I just can't speak to that. But you do notice a difference, for sure. In a way, I was sort of ready to buy and I just needed somebody who knew what they were talking about to help me make an informed purchase, I didn't mind. But there is that interaction that can be off-putting to people.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You know, we talked last week about a guy named, I believe it was Kent, who had written in about how he was feeling really discouraged about a future job in social media, how he was expected to find one. He had been trying. He was sort of looking into a local business solution and seemed to just feel like he was, you know, either qualified in all the wrong places or felt like he was too old to compete for jobs. Got an email from Seth Goldstein, who knows you and apparently has interviewed you on a podcast, Amber, who says, Kent's email really hit a chord. I have a degree from University of Delaware. I majored in history and journalism, and I minored in anthropology and political science. I was a journalist. Then I found myself in web design. And I don't have a certificate in social media, but I did get to my current position. He works in social media now, where I'm in charge of a large company's social media as well as their large client accounts. And I basically lived and breathed social media. I started a podcast. They had Amber on as a guest. It's called A2SM. And he said, I really immersed myself in the industry. From my dedication to the medium, I was able to land a great job in the business. And he says, I'm no spring chicken. He's over 30. He says, I would tell Kent to focus on putting out good content and good commentary, follow influencers, engage with them, retweet their posts, interact, get involved. He says, there are also tons of tweet-ups and meetups and hangouts in real life and Google Plus and unconferences. They don't cost any money. It's not that much work to network and engage with like-minded people. And then he says, hey, if you want to talk to me specifically, Kent, you can reach me. SethGoldstein.net is his website. He's basically on all of the networks, all the social networks. I think that's great advice, especially yeah. since, Amber, you and I talk a lot about social media, but this is somebody who says, I do this for a living. And, you know, I have expertise in a lot of different areas. And what I had to do was just really put in the time to make these connections and relationships. And it ended up working out.
I know exactly who Seth is. And I know because I see him online all the time and I see all the content that he puts out on a regular basis. So really good advice from him. And he would be a great person to ask if you had any questions about how to really make it out there. And also all the work that it does take, because it does take a ton of effort as well. Now, Sarah, this is an interesting story, and I think that you ended up finding this one, but it kind of is about my hometown.
Sort yeah, of. This is a Toronto-based blogger. His name is Zach, and he is doing one of these crazy, like, for a year, I'm going to do this. And we've heard about people saying, I'm going to be off the internet for an entire year. What Zach has decided to do is spend a year living off of promotional handouts from companies, like social media companies who provide, you know, a freebie or, you know, maybe a night at a restaurant if you sign up 25 friends to their service or whatever. There's all sorts of promotional stuff that Zach says, you know, there's so much of it that I'm going to really see if you could live off of it. And it's a very interesting read. This was written up in the Toronto Star. He's 27 years old. He says he's going to feed himself, clothe himself, and amuse himself only through promotions and sponsorships he can find off of the internet. He says there are quite a few highs and lows. He said there are a lot of things missing from my life. It's obviously made me more of a minimalist, but I haven't been able to date in a year. Although apparently because he's gotten at least enough attention, because I guess you could call it a stunt, there's a local condo developer in Toronto that put him up in a penthouse for 5 days in order to, he says, you know, he'll blog about his experience living there. And he says, you know, I haven't even really been on a nice bed in a long time. So obviously he had a nice experience there. But it really shows how he's really had some lows. He says, sometimes I eat only Nutella and nectarines. He apparently started crying during a recent podcast talking about his experience because he was just so tired and kind of lonely and feeling really isolated. But, Amber, I don't know. I don't know what we expect to get out of something like this, except that it's just very interesting to see that he technically does get by.
I know. You know, I know Zach, so it would be fun. Maybe we can get him to check in next Friday, Sarah.
And, oh, that would be great.
I haven't spoken to him for quite a while, but I've had emails with him and I've met him before. So maybe he would check in with us and let us know if he made it through the week okay. It's kind of fun to read the article. So it's an interesting experiment. I love people who are willing to dedicate their lives to doing some type of crazy experiment and give up all sorts of things. So this is a different one, but I'm sure he will join us next Friday, at least for a few minutes, and let us know what's going on.
I think that would be great.
That'd be so much fun.
I'd love to hear more in detail about, you know, what really inspired you to do this and what lessons are you learning? It's funny, the social media coordinator for that condo company that let Zach hang out there for a few days says they were sort of explaining why they reached out to him. Nikki Bettinelli, who's the social media coordinator, said marketing has changed over the years. People would rather make friends before they trust a brand. It's important to reach out to bloggers these days and get your message across to a third party who these people really trust. So it's interesting that for them, it was worth it to eat the money from, you know, somebody basically just not paying to live there. Again, 5 days is not really a long amount of time, but they felt that the payoff was well worth it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. So we'll try to get him on the show. I'll tweet him in a little while and see if he'll join us. But I have a feeling that he will, because it could up his freebies, perhaps.
Excellent. Yes, Zach, we'll are looking out for you. We also got another email from Mike. Mike is on a roll this week. And this is a cute little website that's called justdelete.me. And it's really more an informational way to get a sense of which sites and services are kind of hard to break up with once they've got your information. So, for example, up on the top here, and this looks like it's in alphabetical order, so some of the stuff that starts with numbers is up at the top. 500pix, which is a photo display and sharing community, says it's easy. It's easy to just say, I don't want to be part of this anymore. Then you go to something like, let's go to something that's difficulty hard. So Amazon, show info there. And then they give you a little bit of information about what you have to do if you want to shut down your information and account at Amazon. It says you have to contact Amazon by email via a particular contact form and request that your account be closed. Yeah, it's one of those things where people sort of go like, ugh, I don't want to do that. So you end up being an Amazon customer. Yeah, even if you're lying dormant. Code Academy, again, difficult. They point to why Code Academy says, for security reasons, we'll need to verify that these requests have come from the email address that's on your Code Academy account. So there's a little bit of a security thing that just makes it hard to say, I want to walk away from here. And it's like, I was never here at all. Then, of course, there are some well-known services, Dropbox, easy, they say. Dropbox is not going to run after you saying, please, please come back. So, yeah, this is more, I would say, informational. It's not really going to walk you through the process of cutting accounts anywhere, but it's good for information.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. I've actually seen a couple people tweet about that over the past week or so. It seems to be getting lots of attention. Another thing that's getting some attention is our viral video of the week. This is a mini documentary. It's called I Forgot My Phone. It's kind of a sad look at what happens with technology and all of the social sites we use on a regular basis and how it disrupts our day-to-day lives. In the video, Sarah, which you've probably seen, there is a girl who goes around and has all of these experiences. Like right now, she's laying in bed with her boyfriend and he's on the phone. She doesn't have a phone, so she's kind of being ignored. She goes on a hike with him and or someone else, and they're exercising and talking on the phone, and she's again alone. So it's sort of a lonely look at what it's like in a world where people are always connected.
You know, I empathize. I was... Recently, when I was on my trip down in Miami, there was a day that my girlfriends and I decided to put up residence by the side of the pool and just kind of hang out for a few hours. And I didn't make a decision to not bring my phone. I just didn't realize until I was down there. And they're taking pictures, and it was a beautiful day and you know, sort of texting other friends. And I really felt this, like... I had to make myself not go back up to the room and get my phone because I thought, this is stupid. I'm by the pool. It's wet and you know, I don't need it. It's fine. But I felt a mixture of, like I was a little bit left out and I wasn't part of the fun, even though we were the only ones there. And I really do understand this feeling. There's also I had a friend who, I think he dropped his phone in a lake or something happened and he decided, you know what, this is a really good opportunity for me to go phoneless for a month or so. And yeah, I'll still use the internet, but I'm just not going to have a phone. And he said that he really started to notice how annoying it was when people would instinctively kind of check stuff in front of him because he never noticed it before because he was doing it too. And then once he didn't have that phone in front of him to be able to check, update, take a picture, all of that stuff, he said it made other people seem really silly. And yeah. he had to stop himself from saying, "Gosh, you're just wasting all this time. Yeah. You're I don't know. I guess that's what we could all learn from this video.
It's a good little video. So if you want to look it up, we'll have the link in our show notes. It's called I Forgot My Phone. And I thought it was well done. Yeah, I think it sends a message that perhaps sometimes we're a little too connected and a little too tied to our devices. I know exactly how that feels. Last night I went to an event with my friend Michael, and it was funny because I didn't even bring my wallet. I just brought my phone because I knew I could get a Halo taxi and pretty much do anything else I needed to do just on the phone. And I can't imagine though doing anything without my phone.
Right. Yeah. If you had your wallet or a purse without a phone, it would all seem so impossible.
Empty, Sarah.
This is like, I can't get through it.
This is like social therapy on the show right now.
I've also found that, totally. I've also found that there's a crutch of being able to be like, ooh, uncomfortable silence. Path. What's on path? What's on path? And I find myself doing this. Whether it's not so much that I'm uncomfortable, maybe with the person that I'm having coffee with or whatever, but there's a little bit of there's a lull in the conversation, and normally that's one of these challenges that we as people have to deal with because we need to communicate with each other. And this, for me, and I know for other people, it sometimes turns into a crutch where I say, well, I'll avoid that. Oh, there's 5 minutes. I'll just, do something on my phone that takes me out of where I am in the here and now. And I'm not saying that's always bad, but it's probably something that we should pay more attention to.
Yeah, it's hard to just sit still. I think that's part of the problem, mm-hmm. right? It's hard to just sit and not be connected. So clearly, Sarah and I need therapy. So if you guys have any tips, let us know.
Yes. Yes. We need some sort of a social media list, a step back program. I'm not ready.
Intervention.
Yes. I'm not ready to go cold turkey, but maybe some helpful tips for us would be great. Because, hey, we live and breathe this, but it could be a dangerous thing.
And Sarah's going down a dark hole with Snapchat next week. It'll be Ask FM. Who knows what next, Sarah?
Exactly. I mean, what is next for me? Grindr? Bang with Friends now is back as an app. They renamed themselves to Down. It's like, if I get to Down, just unplug me because it's over. I've reached my bottom. we had a lot of really great feedback from all of you this week, and thanks to everybody. We want to make the show as interactive as possible, and we're going to make a concerted effort to do more of that, pulling tweets live during the show, and obviously getting all of your emails and your voicemails and stuff that you send us throughout the week. Reminder, the social hour at twit.tv is how you can email us. You can leave us a voicemail at 2626-SOCIAL. It's our Google voicemail box, so try to leave us a message. 30 seconds or less can be a question or a comment or some feedback or an idea for something that you'd like us to cover. And we will try to add as much of it into a future show as possible. All right, before we get to Amber's Router Fab, we want to thank 99 Designs for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. 99 Designs is great for people like me who really have no graphical talent at all to get connected with great graphic designers who can do all sorts of good stuff and can make things that maybe I've got a great image of in my mind, but I just don't know how to execute on it. It can be all types of graphic designs, mobile app, for example, some sort of a new fancy logo for my website or a business card. Maybe I've got a great idea for a t-shirt. I think I could sell a ton of them, but I don't know how to design something that looks cool. 99 Designs is great. Community of more than 225,000 graphic designers all around the world with different skill sets and artistic abilities. So what I do is I tell 99 Designs, hey, I'm looking for this particular kind of design. I've got an idea for an app. Then dozens of designers from the community say, I think I know what Sarah wants. They submit designs created just for me. It's not like I'm picking stuff that's already just sort of sitting out there. No, it's custom designed for me. I give them feedback. Then they refine some designs. Then I select and pay for my favorite designs. You can check out, in fact, a social media page at 99 Designs, which is 99designs.com/social-media-page-design, which shows you a variety of social media focused solutions to really give you an idea of all of the stuff that you can achieve with 99 Designs. Really, really beautiful stuff. I mean, these people are incredibly talented. And the nice thing is that 99 Designs is putting you in touch with them. These just aren't, maybe wouldn't be people that you'd know about, be able to run across or be able to ping about a project. Otherwise, you can get started with your next graphic design project right now for as low as $199. And of course, we wouldn't talk about 99 Designs without giving you a little extra something. Something. If you go to 99designs.com/social hour, you will get a $99 power pack of services absolutely free. The nice. Power pack gives you more design time, more attention. The 99 Designs will highlight your project to a lot more people will say, ooh, that sounds like something I'd like to do. So you get twice as many designs. And, you know, Amber, I know you've got a little bit of graphic talent and you've worked in this space for a long time. And I know it can be difficult to sort of figure out who's this perfect person who's really going to be able to bring what I've imagined in my head to life and help me execute on this great design.
Yeah, and I love the social media profiles that they will do for you. I think that's really handy for anyone building a personal brand or a small business. And you know what? I know there are going to be companies out there who are going to hire big agencies to do some of this work. But the reality is, for most people, you don't want to spend a ton of money. And this is a fabulous option. So I think they have some pretty cool services here, especially for people listening to our show who want to get into this space and probably want to build some type of brand online.
Yeah, you know, there's on, you know, some of my other shows, especially the iOS shows, I'm constantly getting emails and tweets from developers who say, oh, you know, I designed this great app. Take a look, please. Will you talk about it on the show? And you know, I sometimes they're awesome. And sometimes I think, well, you know, this person isn't a great designer. And that's just, you know, sometimes you've got an absolutely wonderful idea, but it kind of needs those finishing touches. And that's obviously, you know, design is not for all of us. So this is the way to be able to get put in touch with somebody who's really going to make your project look amazing. And again, it can be all sorts of design projects, whether it's apps or logos or business cards or anything in between. 99designs.com/social hour is the URL to find more about 99 Designs, how it can work for you, and get that power pack of services for free. All right, Amber, let's move on now to your weekly rad or fad. What do we got?
Okay, I had a chance to test out this product yesterday, just very briefly. So I haven't used it for that long. It's called Findables, and it's an iPhone 5 case. But there's a bit of a catch here. It has a QR code, a unique QR code that you get along with the case. So every case has a QR code on it. And the idea is that you program that code so that it has your contact information. So imagine if you're going to an event and you meet someone, you don't have business cards on you. It's a great opportunity to potentially, if they have a QR code reader, they can scan your case and get all of your social media information or contact information. Really simple to use, but also if you lose your phone in the case, then if someone scans it, they can get information from you as far as how to give it back. And you can also set it up within the app. If you use the app on another device, that person gets a reward. So I think that's kind of interesting.
It's kind of like a luggage tag, isn't it?
It is. Yeah, that's actually a really great way of describing it. It is a lot like a luggage tag. And, you know, the idea that you're able to exchange information, I think is neat. The only part of it, I think is complicated is the QR code reader. Not everybody is comfortable using readers or understands them really. So I love the idea, but is there enough adoption of the readers right now?
Yeah. That's the question. Let's say I leave my phone at, you know, a local restaurant and somebody picks it up. What are the chances that they'll say, ooh, not only is there a QR code, but I bet I know how to get a hold of this person by scanning it. And you know, who's to say that they would even understand that it's a QR code? It still looks just like some sort of like a strange barcode to a lot of people. And yeah, they wouldn't even know what to do with it. But that aside, and we would have to assume that just more and more people will understand what QR codes are as we move forward. But so many people use cases for their phones. I do not. And as such, I have a very scratched up iPhone. I should probably figure out a really great case to use when I get a new iPhone eventually. But yeah, if you're going to have a case anyway, it's not like it's sort of, it's really going to be obstructing anything. It's on the back, on the bottom. It's not really anything that's annoying. And it's a really good way to exchange information. I kind of love that part of it as a bit of a modern business card. But also the losing the phone thing, provided mm-hmm. that somebody who understands what it is picks it up, it'd be so much easier to get a hold of you.
And the cases are nice. I mean, I guess we should start there because the cases are very stylish and they're also protective. So that's great if you have an iPhone 5. So I don't think it also has a little stand on it, I believe. And it's just a nice case. So the fact that it has the code with it, I think, is almost an add-on in many ways. I think it's kind of rad.
I think it's rad. I do. I think it's you have to want to put your phone in a case. I think that's sort of the only thing that some people might be like, I don't really like that. Or I love the case I already have and I'm just not going to buy something else. Otherwise, I think it's a great idea because, I think that there are a couple models. One is just a case and one is a case slash stand. Where the back sort of comes up at an angle. But that's great. There are definitely times where I wish I could prop my phone up and I don't have anything to do that currently. I like this idea. I think it's pretty rad.
Yeah, it is pretty rad. So I don't know if anyone has had a chance to try one, but let us know if you've tried one, what you think. Like I said, I had one just for a few minutes yesterday just to test out the case. I thought it was pretty interesting. And I think as more people are comfortable with QR code readers, then something like this could really catch on. It's a great way to keep track of information and keep track of your phone at the end of the day.
Findables case. We are saying two rads. Yay. Oh, that's a good way to go into a holiday weekend. Holiday weekend in the U.S. anyway. We've got
here too.
Oh, yeah? It's all Labor Day all the time in North America?
Yep. It's all Labor Day up here in Canada, so also a long weekend here.
I don't think it's Labor Day in Mexico, which would technically be the rest of North America, but I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. Yay, Labor Day for everybody. Awesome. Well, that does it for this episode of The Social Hour. It was a good one. We talked about all sorts of stuff. Thanks to everybody who came along for the ride. Amber, do you have anything exciting happening in your world over the next week?
Not really. I'm going up to Chris's family's cottage for a couple of days over the weekend. And then my little guy starts school next week. So that's quite exciting. But it is just junior kindergarten, so nothing too strenuous. But that's pretty much it, kind of focusing on that. He just got his first school outfit, believe it or not, and have to get him a backpack and get him all organized and then drop him off to school. And then I'll probably cry for days.
Yeah.
Or maybe not. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah. No, I think that's pretty normal, isn't it? That's kind of the standard parent thing is they grow up so fast.
I know.
Well, I wish I could tell you I was doing something really exciting over the long weekend, but I'm going to just kind of hang out and go to barbecues and eat. So
that sounds fabulous.
Sounds like any other weekend, really, just a little bit longer.
I'll be doing a lot of that too, a lot of barbecuing and maybe s'mores even at the cottage.
Ooh, that sounds great. Well, sounds you great. Have a wonderful one. Everybody else, thanks for joining us. We will see you next Friday. And we'll have to make sure that we catch up with her. But Veronica Belmont is scheduled to be on our show next week as our guest.
And Alexis just wrote back this afternoon. Alexis Ohanian is going to join us.
In October.
Early October. And then we'll try to get Zach to come next Friday if we can talk about living off giveaways.
Excellent. It's going to be great. Yeah, we're going full steam ahead with guests. Amber and I know that you love us, but it's always fun to bring in other interesting people and round out the conversation here on The Social Hour. All right. Until next week, have a good week, everybody.
See you soon.